And we want to say good morning to Dennis Barron. I thank you very much.
Good morning,
for
David.
Being here. When Dennis is here, we do several things. First of all, it's your opportunity to ask grammar questions. So if you're not sure some particular construction or usage, what's correct, he will advise you. We also have talked. We also have talked in the past about how language changes, sometimes in ways that people don't like. Almost always
in
ways that people don't like. And then if people have complaints about misuse, you're free to air those. We can't promise vindication.
We won't promise. Satisfaction is not guaranteed.
No.
In fact, it is often wanting.
Often
wanting.
Well, particularly in my own case. But any and all of those things you can do. And the number here, same as always, we will bring you right here to the program. Calling, pledging is not required. That's nice, but it's not required. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Shall we, I think we have a caller already ready to go. On someone calling on cell phone. So rather than make them wait, we'll get right to it on our line number 4. Someone using up their minutes. Hello, go ahead.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, thanks. I've been wanting to ask this question for a long time. This station has a little poetry section on the 12 o'clock to 1 o'clock hour.
Yes.
And Garrison always says something that with permission or by permission. That's the question I have. Have you heard that?
Mm-hmm. Used by permission or used with permission.
I think he does say
one or the other.
I want to say he says by, but caller, does he say one or the other, or does he sometimes say both of them?
He always says it the same way, and I think he said by permission. With permission.
Right. Okay.
How do you read that syntactically or grammatically?
I'd say it was a toss-up.
Oh, okay.
Frankly. The interesting thing about that, he used a poem of one of our local poets a year or so ago, Mike Van Walligen. And I remember Mike's, I congratulated him. I said, Michael, I heard your poem on Garrison Keillor's little...
it's called the Writer's Almanac.
Writer's Almanac.
Right.
And Mike said, yeah. And you know, the funny thing is he said... Used by permission or used with permission, whichever one he says. But he never asked me permission! And I think Michael actually pointed that out to him, and so he read another of his poems. So, you know, just a little anecdote about that. But it is, I mean, he may have gotten permission from the publisher and they just didn't bother to.
I just have always heard
to let Mike know about it. Used by permission. I seem to think used by permission is sort of the tag phrase in the publishing industry. I'm sorry?
Not so much as.
Uh-oh.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We
lost the caller.
Yeah, I think used by permission sounds to me like the industry standard phrase, but grammatically or in terms of usage, I don't think it really matters much.
I hope that we satisfied the caller, and if somehow we did
don't
something...
guarantee satisfaction, so I wouldn't worry about that.
Oh,
David.
I'm sorry. All right. Well, if we dumped him. We did not do that on purpose. It was an accident, and I apologize if he wasn't quite finished. And he's certainly welcome to call back.
So let's do two things before we take the next
yes.
call. One of them is you should talk about the premiums.
Oh, okay.
And the other
yes.
is before you talk about the premiums,
yes.
I want to make a plug for public radio.
Plug away.
My own testimonial, which is this, that I have to admit, sometimes I come home and you can smell it on my breath, appeared on commercial radio from time to time.
No.
And I always come back to public radio. And let me tell you why. From the performer, am I a performer? From the
yeah,
person
I think so.
On the radio's
I think so.
Point of view. I mean, it's one thing to tell it from the listener's point of view. All of us who listen know what the listener's point of view is between public and commercial broadcasting. But from the performer's point of view, I've been on, and I've listened to plugs about public radio over this drive the last few days. And people say, well, you know, this is radio where the guests are not yelling at you and they're not yelling at each other, as you would get on, say, talk radio in the commercial stations. You have a more reflective kind of dialogue. You have more analytical thinking and talking going on. But also, as an occasional guest on commercial radio, and I was on the Joan Rivers show once a couple years ago. Can we talk? When I'm on commercial radio, people call up and they yell at me. It's not the guests yelling out at the radio. It's these people calling up and they yell. They're screaming at me. You know, you ought to be in jail. You ought. How can you? They let you teach if you say things like that. You know, whatever the public radio audience thinks about the kinds of things I say, which are sometimes a little bit radical for the tastes of the callers, the discourse tends to remain very civil. It's on a higher plane.
That's what we aim for. If you think Dennis should be in jail, keep it to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, go and swear out a warrant. But don't air your views in an uncivil fashion.
That's right. People are always invited to, if they want to disagree with the guest, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever they want to do, all we ask is that people be civil and respectful.
And I've been on shows where the hosts violently disagreed with me, and they would yell at me. And they would, you know, they would essentially pull the plug. Enough of that. Let's move on. And there I'm sitting there. You know. And even on the more civil, and I've been on the local commercial station in town doing, a penny for your thoughts, a couple of times years ago. And that's a much more civil kind of thing going on there. But, you know, somebody asks a really interesting question. You start talking about it. And all of a sudden, we've got a break for a commercial now. You know, you don't have time to get into a subject in any kind of depth. So that's my plug. And here's the added incentive that David will tell you about.
The added incentive, ladies and gentlemen. Dennis, in addition to being a teacher and writer and wag about town, also does a little cartooning on the side. And what he has done is brought us two cartoons that he's done.
Suitable for framing,
printed on kind of a heavyweight stock. And there are two. Do you want me to describe
them? Why don't you describe them?
All right. The first one, we see a table with a cloth over it. And in back is hanging a sign that says, "Welcome English Teachers." And on the table are two things that you would identify as a can opener. And on one, the sign says, "Can opener, $9.95. The other says, "May opener, $24.95. If you're an English teacher, you get that one. All right. These are signed. Oh, yes. Signed. D. Barron right there. And the other, which is in color. Now, this is going to be much more difficult to describe. Pomo, as we say in the business, Postmodern Mutant Ninja Turtles. You know about the Ninja Turtles? Okay. So here they are. They're Pablo, Piet, Sally, and Rene. And they are takeoffs on the artwork of those artists. Pablo is blue and is playing a guitar, and Piet has that grid on his Sally looks like
Salvatore Dali.
It looks like a melted persistence of memory turtle. And Rene is he's got an apple right in front of his face.
The man with the apple, yeah.
The Magritte guy. And so you may have one or the other of these, and all we're asking is that people call in and make a contribution at the basic level or above. If you want to do more, that's fine. But that would mean $40, and we will send you. You may have your choice.
When you call in. You should request it because.
Yeah. Yes, and do that. Tell the volunteer when you call that you would like to have one of Dennis's cartoons and tell us which one, either the can openers or the mutant turtles, and we'll send along one of those with our thanks. And thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome.
All right. We have a number of other callers here, a couple of other callers. Let's get back to the phones and a caller on line number one. San Francisco must be listening on the internet right here. Hello.
Yeah, morning. All I listened with interest is the problem with AM talk radio. This is I'm a person who pays attention to hate radio a great deal. I listen and call in. I try to refute as many of those lies as possible. So I was, as you're talking about syntax and especially PR phrases is what I'm looking for. Today is Earth Day, and certainly something that we should all celebrate. And the idea that the average person is now living in some box, completely separate from nature, and they'll do their gosh darndest to get away from, you know, to avoid nature and to kill it as soon as it crawls or makes its way into their little house. I'm just wondering what we can do with the language to help get people back to nature. Do you have any concepts of a PR phrase that might help encourage people to appreciate the natural life?
Aha. Uh-huh. So you want to artificially encourage people to go back to nature.
I hope it's not.
I'm not, you know, satisfaction is not guaranteed, and I'm not speaking in a loud voice, but I'm trying to understand you want to know how we can cook up a campaign to get people to sleep in the yard.
Well, you could at least to recognize and cherish it, to appreciate.
Well, if it's Earth Day, maybe we should all go out and wear our Earth shoes too.
Or go barefoot.
That's right. I wouldn't recommend that around here. There's a lot of construction going on near the station.
Mm-hmm. But you see what I'm saying,
which is not natural.
Double talk. Mm-hmm. There, a second concept that I'd want to raise. I can remember when I was traveling around the country, I would run into different people who would use a form of double talk,
mm-hmm.
and they would essentially mumble a few words and phrases,
mm-hmm.
and they may not actually say, out of 10 words, they might not actually say more than 5.
Exactly, and this is what you have to, you know, I'm a licensed talking head, and in order to become a licensed talking head, a certified talking head, so that I can do radio shows like this, I have to pass a test where I have to be able to double talk and say a lot in a short period of time without actually saying anything. So you're absolutely right that there is. But let me bring your comment back to specifically the issue of language, because there is a lot of commentary about language which advises speakers and writers to pick what are characterized as natural language forms, natural vocabulary, as opposed to artificial word choices. So in fact, by steering this, let's say, away from advertising and public relations and promoting or not promoting Earth Day, to talking about the notion of what's natural linguistically, what's natural for us to say and to write, as opposed to what strikes people as artificial. And your comment about the double talk, the double speak, the sort of using big words that don't really say anything or cooking up fancy phrases that really mask intentions. I mean, this is a big concern about people who think and write about language. And it's a concern of long standing. I mean, it goes back way before people like George Orwell were commenting on it in the 1940s.
Sure.
It goes back to the beginning of the 20th century. People started saying, prefer the natural word over the artificial one, prefer the native word over the borrowed one. It's a kind of interest. I don't know if you can associate it with modernism. It tends to be a kind of 20th century phenomenon. It tends also, you know, to put it in, if I can put it into a little perspective, to not be particularly valid, because all language is in some extent abstract and to some extent artificial as opposed to natural. I mean, it's a construct, it's a social construct, it's a set of, sort of agreed upon meanings that are fluid, that change over time and over context. So it's a very complex kind of situation, but I think this comes out of a sense of trying to make sense out of language, trying to develop a way of controlling language because we feel we don't have enough control over it, stuff like that.
Well, would you expect that as the public school has spread throughout the century? Well, it's only been about a century or so since there have been public schools in America, and and throughout the rest of the world, it's been something that's slowly but surely gained some credence. And as the average person gains in their ability to read, especially on their own, and gather information, then all of a sudden the aristocracies and the old families and the old controlling interests have decided to do their best to crush the public school and to crush the ability for the average person to figure out what's really going on.
I don't really have an idea of what you're talking about, but I can say that, you know, as far back as the 18th century, John Adams looked at the sort of the American democratic experiment. He wasn't specifically talking about public schooling, although that goes back to the 17th century in Massachusetts, when we had the first public schools, and of course the most recent states to have required public education were in the early 20th century in the South. I think states like Mississippi were the most recent to sign on to that kind of mandate. So between the late 18th century and the early 20th century, that public school movement took hold in this country. But Adams viewed a kind of intellectual meritocracy founded on things like the ability to speak well and to use language effectively as something that would replace the sort of European aristocratic social structure that America was supposed to be trying to get away from in terms of its own foundational thinking.
I hope the caller will forgive me because I've got some other callers, and we're already getting very close to the midpoint. For people who are listening, our guest is Dennis Barron. He's professor of English at the University of Illinois, and every once in a while is here on the program. We talk about language, about grammar usage, how things change. We give people an opportunity to air complaints. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We do have a caller in Belgium. That's line number 4. Right here. Hello.
Hello. Just a quick little question. On your agricultural reports that you folks get on a regular basis, one of your guests always uses a phrase, and I'll be doggone if I can figure out what it is. He says, from one thing to another, and whatnot.
Ah.
What is a whatnot, and where do you find them?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to tell you that, first of all, it may sound a little bit old-fashioned to some speakers, but there is a class of words, and I'm not sure. I think there is a name for it that I probably have forgotten. The whatchamacallits, the whatnots, the thingamajigs. There is actually a piece of furniture called a whatnot, and probably Barbara Peckham can tell you what it is, although I don't remember. It's some kind of cabinet, I think.
A whatnot cabinet, probably, right?
Well, probably it's
you
something.
You store your whatnots in it.
That's right. Well, you ought to know about that. You mean you'd never built anybody a whatnot cabinet?
No, no.
I think it's for.
I don't have a design for one.
Well, you know, we'll talk to the guys at the New Yankee Workshop. Perhaps they can do some drawings. I think it's a cabinet to store curios. A whatnot is, in this sense, you know, it's a whatever phrase and everything else. It's an et al. It's etc. It's a yada 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 yada. It's a continuative, I think, maybe one of the terms we use for those kinds of expressions. It means and includes all the other stuff.
Well, I think I'm going to go look for a whatnot design.
Do that. Well, Henry Frayne, our guy at the board, says in his house they have a whatnot shelf.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So very good. Thank you. Other questions and comments are certainly welcome. 333.
And is the opposite of a whatnot a what?
Well, you should know. You're the word guy.
Well, then it is.
It is.
It is.
Right. If he
from,
says so.
From this day forth, the opposite of whatnot is a what?
Is a what? And from now on, the official language will be Swedish. Jack Brighton, the producer, former producer of Focus 580, currently our head of internet operations, is here. We want to try to encourage people to call in.
That's not actually Jack. That's a hologram of Jack.
I've made myself into a hologram.
He's been threatening to do that for years, so he can be in more than one place at once.
It's so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
Just flash here and there.
Help us, Jack Brighton. You're our only hope.
In any case, what we'd
you will
like
be
to
assimilated.
Do,
resistance people, is futile.
We had a cyborg here the other day. You know,
that's right. Actually, it's true.
You know, the man who lays claim to being the first is a guy who does a lot of research on things like artificial intelligence and robotics. He's a British researcher who had the first.
He's British. Say no more.
Had the first non-medical implant. He did these two experiments where he essentially implanted computer chips in himself.
Mm-hmm.
And thus laying claim to. Well, the first one, it was kind of an identification tag. Mm-hmm. So that, for example,
if
he gets lost, he knows where he is.
He wanders away and forgets to take his medication.
He could come. Well, he actually would do things like when he would come into his laboratory, the computer would turn on and say, "Hi."
Oh, yeah.
It would know that it was him. So anyway,
my dog does that already.
Right.
And does the dog have a computer chip?
No. That's what I'm saying. It's an organic recognition system.
I see. All right. And I'm sure that the guy's computer chip won't fetch or do anything like that.
Probably not. Leave hair on the carpet.
Aren't we supposed to be doing a pledge break now?
I think so. What we want now is for people to support the show, because after all, we don't air commercials. We just do our thing talking about cyborgs and language and all kinds of things on the show. And we think that that's what, you know, the world needs is more discussion of important issues or trivial issues and everything in between. So if you're a listener to the show, you understand what this is all about, and we need you to support it with your dollars. And that means making a pledge call right now to 244-9455. And also, we have a challenge from one of our favorite people in the world, Barbara Peckham of Peckham & Associates, will contribute $200 if we hear from at least 10 Focus 580 listeners with a pledge during this morning from 10 to noon today. So if that's you, please be one of those 10, because that'll make a big difference to our success in this pledge drive. 217-244-9455. And we have the lovely D. Barron.
That's right. We have two cartoons that Dennis has drawn.
I thought you were talking about me as being the lovely
D.
Barron. Well,
for the moment, we have you. But after you leave, we will still have
the cartoons, the can and the May opener and the postmodern.
You can't tell the difference then between me and the cartoon, as opposed to Jack and the holographic representation of Jack.
Yeah, it's very little difference.
That's right.
You have to look very close.
So the bottom line here is we need your support. If you haven't made a pledge, not be a great time to do it. 244-9455.
You know, we do have in our pledge center, Maeve Riley, the editor of Patterns Magazine. She also does a great deal of work on the website. And she's standing by, and she wants to talk on the air about all the calls we're getting this morning on Focus. How are we doing, Maeve?
That's right. We've heard from one person so far this morning. Jan Simon from Champaign gave us a call and made a pledge. And we'd like to encourage others to join her to help meet that challenge from Barbara Peckham. And we need to hear from at least 9 other people, and then Barbara will contribute $200 to our pledge total today. And, you know, I thought you were going to say the lovely Maeve Riley coming out here, and, you know, I have the lovely Dennis Barron's lovely cartoons here, and they're well worth the pledge, too. So if you give us a call, 217-244-9455, Dennis will generously give you one of these cartoons, and you can pick one.
These are not available in stores, by the way.
No. And I love Pablo's blue period. That's really nice. Yes.
Yeah. It's really a classic. Yeah. And, you know, I think you ought to be in The New Yorker.
It ought to be.
It ought to be.
Why don't you tell them that?
Yeah, and they should send you a check, too.
They should.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you can contribute it to WILL.
That's right. And Maeve, I was going to say lovely and brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
But I'm sorry. I ran out of time. I wanted to give you a chance to talk. We really, really need to hear from more Focus 580 listeners. I know people value this show. It's the kind of thing that people go elsewhere in the United States and they hear what other public radio stations are doing, and that's all good. But they are amazed when they come back here and they listen to the show and they listen to David Inge and all the interviews that he does. And the opportunities for you to call in and talk with, you know, famous people or maybe not so famous people that simply have great ideas and insight into things going on in the world. We think that's something that is important to keep going, and we hope you agree. If so, please call us with your pledge, 217-244-9455.
All right. Thank you very much, Jack and Maeve, and we'll talk with you again a little bit later. Dennis Barron is a guest in this hour. He's professor of English at University of Illinois. You have questions about usage, grammar, you are welcome to call. 333-9455 is the number for Champaign-Urbana listeners, and we do also have a toll-free line. That is 800-222-9455.
I've got a question.
A language question.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah. I've been thinking about this, and I don't know the answer because I just started thinking about it. Maybe some callers have some ideas about this. We have a new expression that's very, very common now in speech. And somebody says, "How are you? How are you doing? I'm good. Can get you some more of this. No, I'm good." When did people start saying, instead of, you know, "I'm okay," or "I'm fine," or "things are great," when did people start saying, "I'm good"? I've been hearing it just for the last couple of years. Where did it come from? Why is it spreading? How far is it spreading? It's not just the Midwest. Mm-hmm. I hear it, you know, occasionally. I leave the Midwest. They let me out. They keep track of me with the computer chip. But I'm good.
All right.
Have you noticed that?
Yes. I have noticed that.
I mean, it is a change. It strikes me as an innovation, a shift.
And I suppose that is the case with these sorts of things, that it's going for a while, and then suddenly you notice that it has been around. And
I have some suspicions that maybe it comes from sort of like talk TV and pop psychology and stuff like that, but I don't know.
Well, my brother-in-law, one of now his favorite expressions is, "It's all good."
It's all good. That's another one. It's all good.
You know, if someone's concerned, there's a problem, you think, you say, no. It's all good.
It's all good.
Which is another way of saying, don't worry, it's fine, right, okay, everything's right. All right.
Yeah. Where
it's
did this come from? I mean, it's not good.
No, now why? Now why is that? What's wrong, Mr. Barron?
Are we trading places?
I won't start yelling. But seriously now, why is it so egregious for me to say, if you ask me how I'm doing, if I say I'm good rather than I'm fine or I'm okay or something?
It's not. You know, I'm just...
You're trying to generate controversy.
I am. You got me there.
All right.
You know me.
Yes, I do. And that's the kind of behavior that
expect. As we noticed last year on this show, off and on, for the last 20 years.
People keep telling me stuff like that, and I just don't want to hear it.
You don't want to hear it.
No, I don't want to think about that fact. You know, one of these days I'm going to retire. I would be eligible to retire in 2008, so people just better watch it.
You're kidding.
No.
You're kidding.
No.
Can I have your job?
Maybe
your CD collection.
Never mind.
I'm just kidding.
We'll talk about those things later. We do have some callers. Matt Toon is next. Let's talk with him on line number 4. Hello.
Good morning. You're one of my favorite guests, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have...
Say no more. Next caller. Okay.
I have two expressions, I guess, if you could call it that. The words exact same.
Mm-hmm.
How did that get started, and why is it so commonly used? It was even used in the currently popular The Da Vinci Code, which really surprised me.
Okay.
Exact same.
Yeah, it's the exact same thing.
Why can't people say exactly the same?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It is true. It's been an expression, an idiom, for some time. And one of the things that is true about idioms is that they are somehow exempt from the normal grammatical constrictions.
Really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because they get sort of a frozen form, mm-hmm. you know, and they don't vary. So, exact same. I'd say it's popular because it sounds very terse, very very concise. It's a very clear sort of thing. Otherwise, you'd have to say it's exactly the same, where the article intrudes between the other two words, and maybe people feel that exact same is a little bit more direct. I don't know, but it is popular. It's informal. It's not, high-toned or...
Is it acceptable, though?
Yeah. Yeah, certainly in informal contexts and languages is, in more and more contexts, more and more informal.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the same, kind of buttoned-down view of public discourse that I remember growing up with, say, in the 50s. We've relaxed a lot about... our expectation. And some people complain about that. I mean, there's always plenty of people who want to say, well, it's too informal, it's too relaxed, it's too abandoning. We abandon the rules too much, something like that.
Well, I have another word for you.
Sure.
That the common folk are picking up and mispronouncing, and it's restaurateur.
Restaurateur.
They're saying restaurateur. Yes.
Yeah, and I think that's not too new, really. And you know, you can sort of see why, because it's a curious thing. Restaurateur is a French word.
Yes.
Or so is restaurant, for that matter.
Yes, it is.
But restaurant's the common, you know, it's the nickel and dime word as opposed to the $100 word. The manager at your local McDonald's is not a restaurateur.
That's right.
Although
that's right.
McDonald's classifies itself as a restaurant. I don't think of those places as restaurants. Maybe I'm being too haute cuisine. But I don't think of them as restaurants. I don't think of their products as, I mean, I don't think of hamburgers as sandwiches, although hamburger sandwich, I think, was one of the original ways of saying that construction.
That
you could look that up in your H.L. Mencken or something like that.
But I was very surprised to see a couple of months ago an ad on TV, and in big, bold letters across the bottom was restaurateur.
Yeah, your local neighborhood restaurateur. This is a restaurant that is trying to move up in the echelon they're raising their prices and trying to get a classier clientele. And
they're serving the exact same food that they were before.
That's right.
They made it so classic.
Yeah. The difference between a restaurateur and a restaurateur is the restaurateur does not give you all-you-can-eat specials.
Well, I thank you for your input, sir.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Is it not the case that there are other examples where words are duplicated, that is people are put two words together that mean the exact same thing?
Yeah.
And the idea is it's for emphasis.
It's emphatic. Redundancy is an important feature in communication systems, and language is a communication system, and one of the things that redundancy does is try to prevent misunderstanding. So repetition, which is the more ordinary word for redundancy. In England, redundancy means you've been laid off.
You've been fired, yeah. Exactly. Been made redundant.
Made redundant or, downsized, I guess, is the euphemism in this country. So, and the other thing is that, you know, the way we treat borrowed words is to nativize them. And so if restaurant is originally a borrowed word, but for all intents and purposes, it's a native word now. It's been in the language for at least a couple hundred years, if not longer. I don't know when it came in. But you take restaurateur and you nativize it and you put the N in and, you know, you make the analogy. What does this person do? Is they run a restaurant, right? So you put the N back in there. It's a pretty predictable process.
We have another caller. Other callers here. Next is in Robinson, line number one. Hello.
Yes, for Dr. Barron and the caller from Belgium, if he truly wants plans for a whatnot shelf, he should contact Barbara Peckham, who you recently mentioned, because they were Victorian freestanding pieces of furniture, not cabinets, open shelves frequently in the corner.
Yeah,
with graduated tiers for knickknacks.
I can actually visualize what you're talking about, yes.
I'm certain that the man in Belgium was joking about wanting plans, but
yes.
I wanted to call with my pet peeve of so many writers, principally female. I'm not trying to be sexist, but it happens that I read a lot of female fiction, who don't seem to know the difference between bring and take.
Bring and take.
They will have a character, a man sitting in the living room, shouting to his wife in the kitchen and say, take me a beer, and instead of bring me a beer from where you are to...
I don't know what you've been reading, but I've never encountered that.
Well, it
can occurs, you give us a citation?
It occurs over and over and over again in modern fiction.
By women?
Well, principally, but not exclusively, by okay. no means.
But can you give me a title and an author?
At the moment, I do not. It's
okay.
been
okay.
bugging me for several years.
Well, the next time you find an example, email me with it, because it's interesting. Because that's something I have to say I have never come across. And I read a lot of contemporary fiction, and a lot of it by women.
Could that be a regionalism of some kind?
I've encountered it's mostly among younger women. I've encountered it
younger
in California
women.
And
California,
the state
well,
of Maine and the state of Virginia.
California huh. is
I even
a
wrote,
strange place.
I even wrote one author who had made the mistake. She was talking about her Irish family.
Ah.
And I said, compare I'll Take You Home Again, Kathleen, which was sung in New York to Kathleen, promising to take her back to Ireland for a visit, as an example. Of
only if you're a tenor, though.
I beg your pardon?
Only if you're a tenor.
Be that as it may.
We'll keep an eye out for this, and do I'm sure Dennis is serious that if you
yeah.
If you do come
yeah.
across a title, he would be interested
if,
in.
If it is, I mean, if it is dialect, in the sense that it's, I certainly have not encountered in Irish dialect writing. Not to say that it wouldn't exist there. I just
I'm totally unfamiliar
with it. I mean, words like bring and take can be frequently confused by children who don't quite get with the program for a while as they're acquiring
them. I'll find several examples.
They're related, but
send them to David because I do not have email.
All right. Well, I'll pass them on to Dennis.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
bye-bye.
Thank you. All right. We will next talk with someone in Champaign, so back here locally, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Would you say bring this back to the library or take this back to the library for me?
I would say
either one.
Well,
you?
I guess you could, but I think I would say
take is from here to there. Bring is from there to here.
It really
is it? I'm just trying to think out loud here.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's
always a mistake. I shouldn't think even quietly. Some people tell me
we have a caller.
Don't bother.
You're on line
Don't
number.
Bother because it's getting you nowhere.
Are you done? The caller's on.
I guess so.
Okay.
Take a call.
Are you finished?
Let's go to the phones.
Let's go to the phones. The caller is in Champaign, I believe, in line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I wanted to comment on I'm Good. I first noticed it about 4 or 5 years ago when my oldest daughter, who's 23 now, I think mm-hmm. she kind of brought it, using brought, I think
yeah.
she brought it home from college.
Yes.
I think it was from young people in high school and college, and she started using it, and I'm not sure if it was in high school, and she went, she went to high school locally, and
mm-hmm.
then she went to college, and she started saying it, and then my son, who's now in college, started using it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I notice it more now, and now it's filtered down to high school, and my high school daughter doesn't use it as much. So I mm-hmm. think it could be sort of a young people's expression that's making its way up through.
That's very plausible, because I've had a similar experience. I mean, I think I started noticing it before my currently college-enrolled daughter started using it, but she does say it a lot now.
So I
yeah.
think I have a couple other expressions I wanted to mention, too, if I could.
Mm-hmm.
One, I think, is an Illinois expression, but ever since I've lived in Illinois, I've noticed it. People say, I'm not for sure about that, or I'm for sure. They use for sure instead of sure.
Right.
Do you think that's just an Illinois colloquialism?
I don't know. I don't know, because I'm not for sure. I've heard for sure as an alternate of sure.
Well, I especially hear it in the negative when they say, I'm not for sure.
I don't think I've ever heard that. But that's interesting.
Well,
I will look out for it.
You're in university circles more than out in the community. Maybe.
Well, you ought to hear the way people talk around here. It's not what you'd think.
Well.
No, I'm kidding. But I mean, we are a very pretentious lot here at the university, and we wouldn't be caught dead saying something like "for sure." I mean, certainly we wouldn't. No, I just haven't come across
except
that.
Except that the people and here are more from all over the United States.
Exactly, exactly.
So know, I don't know, I've heard quite a few people, and I just wondered if it was particularly a local one. And the other thing that my children have started saying, but I see it's not only my children, it's other people's children too. Mm-hmm. They say on accident instead of by accident.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's an analogy with on purpose.
Yeah, and that's becoming more common in spoken language.
I don't know, but I think every generation of children reinvents on accident.
Oh, and it's something
as an analogy with on purpose. I did it on accident. You know, I think almost every kid I've ever talked to at some point has said on accident, and in my experience, most of them eventually acquire the idiom by accident and realize that it's not an exact clone of on purpose, even though they're related idioms, and makes that shift. But if enough of them don't make that shift, then this will become, you know, a marker that will spread more widely. Certainly the analogy is there, and analogy is a great force in linguistic change to do this. I mean, I've seen generation after generation of children invent I amn't.
Yeah.
You know, as the first person singular negative.
Am not?
Yeah.
I amn't.
Amn't. Contracted form. I amn't going. Are you going? I amn't. I amn't going.
Uh-huh.
Instead of saying I'm not going, and a lot of them, you know, then switch. And amn't was characterized as Irish and Scottish dialect too, I believe. You know, in some forms of English, it's more than just a temporary coinage, which then people shift to the more common am not or am.
I have one more thought on bring and take.
Mm-hmm.
I think it does have to do with the speaker and the caller before. Maybe he was, I have never heard anybody say, take me a beer. But mm-hmm. I think the thing that gets confused is if people say, you could say, bring him a beer or take him a beer. I've heard both.
Sure. And they're directional. I mean, when I was thinking about from here to there and from there to here, bring and take imply some kind of location of the speaker and the object and a direction of movement.
Mm-hmm. Take this back. Bring me another one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So bring is usually towards the speaker and take's usually away.
Mm-hmm.
But
not necessarily. I mean, it does imply some contextual location and direction stuff that you can tease out of the situation, whatever the situation happens to be. But take me a beer sounds very strange because the direction seems to be totally wrong there. I mean, usually, you know, when the speaker is speaking, and they're the focus of the direction. It's from somewhere else to where I'm talking now, to here, from there to here. And bring means, in that sense, get it from someplace else and move it in the direction towards where I am.
Yeah.
And take seems to imply take it in a direction away from where I am in that context. So take me a beer sounds very bizarre to me.
I have one last thing and then I'll hang up.
Yeah.
Along with I'm good coming from the college age group, I noticed something that's coming in from high school and college that it's saying hey instead of hi.
Oh, yeah.
Have you noticed?
Oh, yeah. That has become almost universal greeting so much that I see it as a greeting in emails now. Hey.
Yeah.
You know, and
that,
so
and
in writing.
That
and,
I'm good.
Yeah.
So I think that isn't that old, and then it sort of went out of fashion, and now it's coming back in. Didn't they? That used to be something people said many decades.
Well, I remember the adult chastising expression to children, hay is for horses, you know, which comes from the hailing hay, you know, let me get your attention kind of hey, but it's not in that sense used as a hello. It is. It is. It is more insistent than hello, which is simply it's more attention grabbing than hello.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Whereas currently, I think it's just a substitute for hello. What happens is that greetings have almost no semantic content whatsoever because they're so common and so frequently used. And so to put a little spin on a greeting, you change it somehow. And so hey, as a shortening for, you know, hey, what's happening or something like that, then becomes simply a hello substitute.
We'll try and get at least one more call in, and that would be a caller in somewhere here in Illinois on our they're calling from Indiana, I think, line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes. It's another one of those states without a vowels in it.
You betcha. Reach me down.
Reach me down. Yes. It's an idiom.
Have you talked about that one?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
What would you like to say about it?
It drives me crazy.
Okay, here. So let's, you know, so people say reach me down, and you don't like it. So what do you do when people say things that you don't like, that drive you crazy? I mean, what are the ways of dealing with a situation like that? That's a sort of a more general way of looking at this. We all have pieces of language that we don't like, that make us uncomfortable, that drive us crazy, that we actually despise, or just make us mildly disgusted. So what do you do in a case like that? How do you get somebody to stop? I mean, I once suggested on this program with the caller who was very insistent that, you know, the only way to get somebody to stop using that was to put a plastic bag over their head. And that seemed to me an extreme solution because it cuts off discourse altogether. So what do you do? How do you get people to conform to your wishes?
I don't react. I don't reach me down it.
You don't do it.
I say, well, you reach it down yourself.
If you can learn to say it correctly, then maybe you'll get your wish.
Hope so.
Which is, you know, I don't know. How do people respond to that? They think they look at you kind of strange.
Well, I got hit on the chest by my wife.
Ah, see? See, it does tend to be, it's a passive-aggressive kind of thing to do.
That's the most, yes.
I think you need more language therapy here.
Yeah.
This is
very dangerous to take up these issues with spousal units, as we all know. Should we try to go one more? Maybe we'll try. How about we have somebody on cell phone on line 3. Why don't we try them?
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, actually, I could maybe speak to that because I have one that has been driving me crazy, and I've been trying to get others to conform.
Mm-hmm.
When people say whole nother.
A whole nother, yeah.
I hear this on 580.
Mm-hmm.
580 sometimes.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
A whole nother thing instead of another whole or a whole other. And I just pointed out, isn't that funny how people say a whole nother?
Yeah.
There's really no word nother.
Mm-hmm.
And once you point it out, then people become self-conscious about it, and they'll change what they say sometimes, in front of me anyway, I think.
Right. So you make people uncomfortable. That's one way of you know,
yeah,
shaming them into appropriate discourse.
I'm just pointing out how odd it is.
I mean, the other way is to, you know, to get a cattle prod or a taser or something like that. I mean, if it gets more of a problem, you know, you can get a restraining order, I suppose. I mean, that's what teachers are for.
An order of protection.
Order of protection. Oh, hey, I like that. An order of protection for the English language.
That would be kind of cool.
I think I'll write a column about that for something. I love that.
There's another phrase that I hear. I never heard it until I moved to Illinois.
Ah,
or
yes.
It's not a phrase, but it's usage. People around here seem to say, like, my lawn needs mowed.
Oh, yes.
Or
that's,
my filter needs fixed.
That goes all the way from central Pennsylvania through this narrow band of the Midwest and past here into Missouri or however you want to pronounce that. It's kind of, sometimes I've heard it called the Pittsburgh passive. And I heard it ascribed to German immigrant influence on English as a kind of German English idiom that gets, you know, the clothes need washed or washed, the lawn needs mowed, that sort of thing. It is a geographically marked variant.
I don't point that one out to people. I've just tried to get used to it.
Yeah, they're not going to change. I mean, that's the thing. It's very hard to get people to change their language. I mean, electrodes don't work. Low grades on tests don't work. The motivation has to come from within. Maybe a 12-step program combined with an order of protection.
Sounds good to me. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for the
call.
My
battery's going low. I've got to
get off. All right. And we,
my battery feels pretty low, too, this time of the morning.
A coffee would be good.
Coffee would be good.
Let's all go. But
we
first,
could send Jack out for coffee. But no, that's...
No, he's long past going out for coffee.
Here he is.
He's a webmaster now. He doesn't go out for... Well, he goes maybe for himself, but he doesn't go for anybody else.
Hey, listen, I'll do whatever needs to be done.
He programs the coffee.
But right now, the money needs raised.
Ah.
So we got to talk
about
that.
I never remembered hearing that until just the last couple of years. I don't think I heard anybody say that.
Well, I've heard it ever since I came here. But it tends to pattern after German immigration patterns in the Midwest.
All right. Well, we're about 2 minutes away from the market update. So we need to get people to go to the phone and give us a call and make a pledge.
We got
to
give away some of those cartoons that Dennis brought in.
Yeah, I don't want to take them home.
And they're wonderful, actually. They're brilliant. And if you'd like one, all you have to do is call our pledge line. 217 is the area code. 244-9455. Make a pledge at our basic membership level of $40 a year. That's what, 11 cents a day or something like that?
I believe so.
Yeah. And you can also get the coffee mug, right, as well as the...
Absolutely. We have a variety of thank you gifts that we always offer folks. But the most important thing is to support the service. And also, we've got a challenge going. If we hear from 10 Focus 580 listeners before noon, Barbara Peckham will contribute an additional $200 to our pledge total. And that's a big deal. So please make that call right now, 217-244-9455.